It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Theranos had everything Silicon Valley wanted. A charismatic female founder who dropped out of Stanford, prestigious board members like Henry Kissinger and James Mattis, a bold new invention that was going to change the world, the technology to run hundreds of medical tests with a single drop of blood. In 2015, Theranos was valued at $9 billion, which led Forbes to name Holmes the youngest female self-made billionaire in the United States.
This is what happens when you work to change things. And first they think you're crazy, then they fight you, and then all of a sudden you change the world.
But the technology didn't work, and an investigation by the Wall Street Journal revealed the company was built on lies. Today, Theranos doesn't exist. Holmes and her number two, Sunny Balwani, are facing federal fraud charges. And the story of her spectacular rise and fall exposed the dark side of the Silicon Valley startup generating machine. Elizabeth Holmes is also the subject of a new documentary that airs tonight on HBO. But we're turning to the man who first exposed the lies. John Carreyrou is the investigative reporter for The Wall Street Journal who broke the story back in 2015. John, great to have you on the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So, wow, that's a big story to break. What was captivating to you about this from the beginning?
She came on my radar in late 2014 when I read a profile of her in the New Yorker magazine. And she had actually become quite famous in Silicon Valley and beyond over the previous year. She'd graced the cover of Fortune magazine. And she, as you mentioned, she was really seen as the second coming of Steve Jobs, as a female version of Steve Jobs. But in the New Yorker profile, I noticed the ambitious and the big claims she was making. And I also noticed the main conceit of the story, of her story, which was that she had dropped out with no medical training and supposedly gone on to revolutionize, a branch of medical science, namely blood testing. And I'd covered healthcare and medicine for a bunch of years, and I knew that you need formal training to add value, often, medical school, PhD, years of research. And so that struck me as very odd. That was the first thing that made me suspicious about her.
So you start on this path. It's 2015. You publish your first story. What's the reaction? What was the first story you published?
Well, the first story took actually 9 months to report.
And it's clear that we understand that, because that's something that I think journalists, non-journalists don't get, right? How long it takes to get this.
Yeah. It was challenging. I had to make contact with former employees who had signed non-disclosure agreements and who were being threatened by lawyers behind the scenes. And the company also, before publication, waged a very strong counterattack. So we finally published the story in mid-October 2015, and you actually played a clip of Elizabeth Holmes' reaction. She went on Jim Cramer's show, Mad Money, on CNBC that evening. And I think her quote was, this is what happens when you change the world. People fight back, and then eventually they're proven wrong. And of course, we were not proven wrong, because over the course of the ensuing, 6 months to a year, regulators stepped in, inspected Theranos facilities, issued reports that corroborated our reporting, and verified that the blood testing was inaccurate, that most of the blood tests were not even performed on Theranos technology. They were being performed on Siemens machines, on third-party machines made by the German conglomerate Siemens.
I want to talk a little bit about the media here and its role. Were you threatened at any point when you were doing the reporting? I know that when investigative reporters do this kind of work, it can be a little dangerous.
I was threatened with litigation by the company and by its outside counsel, David Boies, as was my employer, The Wall Street Journal. My confidential sources were threatened. One of the corroborating sources was a young man by the name of Tyler Schultz, whose grandfather is the former Secretary of State, George Schultz, who happened to be on the board of Theranos. He was ambushed by two Theranos lawyers at his grandfather's house. Another confidential source was confronted in the parking lot of her new employer and also threatened with litigation and given an ultimatum. The COO of the company, the number two executive of the company, who was Elizabeth Holmes's boyfriend, Sunny Balwani, flew to Phoenix, which was the main area where they had rolled out the Theranos blood tests in Walgreens stores, and showed up at the offices of doctors who had spoken to me on the record about discrepancies they'd found in their patients' tests and threatened them and tried to get them to sign written statements recanting what they had told me on the record.
I guess the main question, and a lot of folks want to know the answer to this question, is how? How could you get to that level that she got to and just essentially lie about the technology, lie about what it was meant to do? Like, how do you get to that point in Silicon Valley or anywhere? I mean, is it that hungry for a story that it forgets everything else, or was there something else at play here?
Well, she wasn't a Bernie Madoff in the sense that she premeditated a long con right when she dropped out in 2003. I think she really did want to be an entrepreneur. She really did have this vision of a portable blood testing device that would do a bunch of tests off a tiny pinprick of blood. She went about raising money.
How did she raise money for something that wasn't?
Well, I mean, that's the way it goes in Silicon Valley. At the very early stage, when a young founder is founding a company, you know, VCs are making a bet. In fact, in tonight's documentary on HBO, you'll see Tim Draper, the famous Silicon Valley VC who cut Elizabeth Holmes her first $1 million check, says that, you know, he invests in a guy and a cat, I think is what he says. And so, in other words, he goes with his gut feeling about the entrepreneur. And actually, people like Draper and Ellison, who were among the early investors, were not the investors who were defrauded. The investors who were defrauded are the investors who came 10 years in, 11 years in. And they're the ones to whom Elizabeth Holmes and Sonny Balwani made representations that weren't true. At that point, the company was more than a decade old, and they represented to these investors that they had achieved the vision, when in fact they had not. The prototypes were actually machines that didn't work at all. And Elizabeth and Sonny lied to these investors and told them that the machines worked, and in fact even staged demos that were fake demos, where the prospective investors would come in and their finger would be pricked, the blood would be put in the machine, and then they'd be ushered out and told this is going to take a little while. And then the blood sample would be taken out of the prototype and taken to the lab and tested by a lab associate at the bench by hand.
What was it about Elizabeth Holmes specifically that made her so intoxicating for all of the? I mean, she's, you know, attractive, white woman, dropped out of Stanford. Were all those things in the mix here? And if so, what's next for her? Does she stand to, you know, do time for what she did?
She's very smart, very charismatic, and she believed in her vision. And she believed she was going to get there eventually. It didn't matter so much in her mind that it didn't work yet. She figured that if she could maintain the fiction that it did work now and she would get there eventually, everything would be okay and no one would be the wiser. In terms of the consequences she faces very real consequences. Now she's been indicted. She and her ex-boyfriend, Sonny Balwani, have been indicted on 11 counts of wire fraud and conspiracy to commit wire fraud. And they're facing a criminal trial potentially as early as late this year or first quarter of next year. There's going to be a status conference in the case in mid-April, and the judge may set a trial date then. They face up to 20 years in prison if convicted.
What, if anything, has Silicon Valley and its investors learned from this? Or, I mean, do we stand to see similar fraud in the future?
I'd like to think that Silicon Valley has learned a lesson. The main one in my mind is that you can't apply the fake it till you make it Silicon Valley playbook that is often applied in the software industry to healthcare and to medicine, or for that matter, to any endeavor or field where lives are at stake. Has Silicon Valley really learned its lesson? I don't know. I hear a lot of people say that Theranos was an outlier, that it wasn't representative of the Valley because sophisticated venture funds weren't the ones that invested in the company. And while that's true, the last round of investors were billionaires, I think what enabled Elizabeth Holmes to exist and to thrive is Silicon Valley's culture. And one of the features of that culture is this myth of the brilliant young founder who can see around corners, all-knowing, can never do wrong. I think we owe that myth to Steve Jobs, unfortunately. And it's a very popular notion in Silicon Valley. And I think she rode that wave and she really benefited from it.
And what about the media? I know your work was really exposing what was happening here. But did the media have a role in building her up?
It did. And probably the reporters who wrote profiles of her and who gave her a lot of airtime should have been more skeptical and should have done more research. But in the case of at least two of them, and I'm thinking of Fortune magazine's Roger Parloff and then the guy who wrote the New Yorker profile, Ken Auletta, they were outright lied to when they were given interviews by Elizabeth Holmes. And so it's hard to fault a journalist when that journalist is being bald-faced lied to.
John Carreyrou is the investigative reporter for The Wall Street Journal who broke the story back in 2015, and his book on Theranos is called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. John, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.